Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Preston Connor, and I'll be today's host for the Hinckley's Forum. Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here, locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door to our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Europe, Opportunities and Challenges, the EU Presidency of Latvia. Our guest is His Excellency Andris Razans, Ambassador to the U.S. for Latvia. Ambassador Andris Razans became Ambassador of Latvia to the United States on July 30, 2012. Ambassador Razans previously served as Political Director, Undersecretary of State at the Latvian Ministry of Foreign Affairs from 2010 to 2012, where he also held post as Ambassador at Large of the Ministry's Policy Planning Group from 2009 to 2010. He was a counselor and head of the Policy Planning Group from 2003 to 2004, head of the EU Policy Division, 1997 to 98, and desk officer of the Northern European Division, 1993 to 94. In addition, he was Latvia's ambassador to Denmark, 2004 to 2009, diplomatic advisor to the Latvian Prime Minister, 2004, and deputy head of mission of the Latvian Embassy in Sweden, 2000 to 2003. Ambassador Razans was also diplomatic advisor to the Latvian president from 98 to 2000, as well as second secretary and third secretary at the Latvian embassy in Denmark from 94 to 97. Ambassador Razans holds a master's degree in history from the Latvian State University and has studied at Sweden's Stockholm University and Lund University, where he was a guest researcher, as well as the London School of Economics and USIA Visitors Program for Young Leaders. He speaks Latvian, English, Russian, Swedish, as well as some German, Danish, Norwegian, and French. Please join me in welcoming His Excellency Andris Razans.
Good morning, I will just turn it on. Good morning to everybody. It's such a great pleasure to be among you today in Utah, in Salt Lake City. It's my first visit to Salt Lake City in Utah. I have been for the last 2 years ambassador of Latvia to the United States, and it has been really tremendously interesting and very enjoyable time. But before I begin, how many of you have been to Latvia? Okay, it's not a problem at all. It's always time to come. And I should begin by saying that, well, this year, in January, Latvia took over the reign of EU presidency and will be holding that for 6 months. We began in January and will end up in July. But perhaps this fact as such might not really count for a good argument or good reason to make this event top news on front pages of newspapers, perhaps. But perhaps not. Just 25 years ago, Berlin Wall fell down. And at that time, it was a time when Europe reemerged from a very difficult period in European history, starting from the Second World War. And my country, of course, did not come out as a winner on the winner's side or as the on the side of independent nations afterwards the war. Currently, when we see that European security situation really has deteriorated recently, beginning from the beginning of last year, with developments that nobody really was thinking might be happening again in Europe, because everybody was thinking that, well, it's already done deal, Europe is safe and free and almost whole, and that future for European nations is bright and really very good. Developments, what we have seen unfolding in the very center of Europe, Central Europe, and in Ukraine, developments, what we have been observing in last 10 years already happening in Russia, these developments tell us something different. Well, although Europe is much safer place to live and raise the families and study and enjoy than perhaps Europe was before the Second World War, but many things what had recently happened makes us Europeans to be very, very worrisome, very concerned. And a little bit further, I will tell you a little bit more on that part. But the very fact that 25 years since the fall of Berlin Wall and since restoration of Latvian independence in 91, Latvia today stands as the leader among European Union's nations and is responsible for approximately 95% of European business for the next half of the year. It really illustrates quite a profound change in Europe, specifically in that part of Europe that, not because of our own will, became part of either of Soviet Union or Warsaw Pact on the second half of last century. I should begin by perhaps a little bit making the background on what Latvia is about. And I should say that its history really is very much rooted in anything that has happened in northern part of Europe. Latvia is a North European nation, basically. We are not Nordic country, but we are North European. If you look just on a map geographically, or if you try to understand the things and developments in our part of Europe called the Baltics, it's typically North European part of Europe by standards of geography, historic developments, mentality, religious aspects of Europe. It's Northern Europe. And Latvia was established as an independent country after the First World War, when four European empires crumbled down and small European nations like Latvians or Hungarians or the Finns, Lithuanians managed to establish their independent states. It happened in 1918. Latvia did the same thing. Latvians as well strive for independence. Before that, it was an interesting period of our history, long period, starting with an independent state already from the 13th century, beginning of 13th century, a country established by Teutonic Knights that came from Jerusalem and a country that in history of Europe was known as Livonia, that was crushed by emerging nation powers like Poland, Sweden, and then at the end, Russian Empire. Country that was part of different empires, Swedish for approximately 100 years, Russian Empire a little bit more than 150 years, Polish-Lithuanian Kingdom for approximately 60 years. So I'm just telling that, showing that we have really unique background and historic heritage and cultural heritage. The country is very ethnically diverse, although the majority of people that are living in Latvia are Latvians, but historically we have had different people living on territory of Latvia, people with different backgrounds, different influences, And very often when the big ones have been fighting against each other, we have Latvia became as a shelter for many, many refugees, either coming, trying to escape the atrocities within Tsarist Russia, or during just before the Second World War, when many European democratic nations have been closing down for Jewish population, and Latvia gave refuge for many, many Jews just before the war. Of course, double of occupations during the Second World War time. Soviet at the beginning was starting with Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, 1939. Then agreement on military basis, what Latvia had to sign with Soviet Union in 1939, because Soviet Union was looking for expansion of their security zone around military basis. Then suddenly ultimatum in 1940, orchestrated by the government of Soviet Union, demanding the change of the government. That happened with the very presence of Soviet troops in the Latvian territory. Elections of parliament where there's only one political list of one political party that was allowed to participate in these elections. This list was written by Soviet embassy in Riga. Very many things what you have seen perhaps in Crimea just recently unfolding. And time has passed, definitely, but not so many things had passed in a way how things in Europe, unfortunately, especially in from the point of view of Kremlin's activities, are run these days. For 50 years, Latvia was wiped out from the European political map from 1940, basically. There were four Baltic states, so Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Finland, before the war. Finland managed to escape the Soviet occupation. The reason was very simple. They did fight back. They lost quite many people, but somehow they managed to stop the invasion. The remaining three Baltic states never fought back, and somehow trying to avoid unnecessary bloodshed, what our politicians thought at that time. And the price what at the end we paid was that Latvia disappeared from the political map of Europe. We have been considered as purely part of Soviet Union. Latvians as a ethnicity was basically forgotten for the sake of political convenience or simply ignorance. We have been called Russians during all these 50 years of Soviet occupation. And then slowly in the 80s, when things in Soviet Union, because of the war in Afghanistan, Soviet Union stage was not really developing well enough, and the prices for oil and other energy resources Soviet Union was exporting heavily, exactly what Russia is doing today, suddenly the life in Soviet Union started to crumble down. I was young enough and old enough to remember. I graduated university in 93, but I was of 20 years age when the political freedom movement started to begin in Latvia in 87, 88, when our independence movement was established in 1988. And we entered the phase of what's called in European history the time of singing revolution. You know that, well, Czechoslovakia, we speak about the Velvet Revolution. In Ukraine, we spoke about Orange Revolution, and there are many other revolutions. In the Baltics, we speak about singing revolution. And singing, because it's one of our most important cultural heritages, is the choir singing traditions that goes very well back in our history. And choir music singing is something that during the centuries had kept the very national spirit of small nations together in the Baltics. And every fourth year we organize huge choir singing festivals in the Baltics. More than 20,000 singers simultaneously on a stage for a day long singing in national costumes, something that has been recognized by UNESCO as World's Cultural Heritage. But in political life, these concerts or festivals have been really something that kept our nation together during all difficult and good times. And because of that, singing was part of our revolution at the end of the 80s. And when the singing revolution began in 88, sometime before Berlin Wall fell down, we have been watching what's happening and what's happening a bit further west on eastern side of Germany, and have been thinking why the Germans were so slow, because for us youngsters, students in that time in Latvia, I think it was pretty clear that Latvia is going to be, regain independence again, that we restore our constitution that was adopted in 1922 and is still in force in Latvia, that we'll regain everything that our parents lost. And somehow we thought, well, if Czechs and Slovaks are fast enough, Germans are a little bit slow, Baltics are very fast, the Poles are extremely fast, and then things started to change. And in, of course, the fall of Berlin Wall, it was a strategic indicator that Europe has been on a way to Europe independent, free, and whole again. For us, it meant many things. And then in 1991, when the Soviet leadership staged very unsuccessful coup d'etat against that time Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, things changed suddenly. And in August 1991, we regained independence. I'm telling that because it simply illustrates one thing. When I speak about our EU presidency these days, in 91, there was a group of former Soviet republics that began their independence road or way. The Baltic countries managed somehow to go through the very difficult period of reforms, of transformation. But not, those are not only Baltic states. We had Ukraine, we had Moldova, we had Belarus, and we basically began from the very same start point. The point of departure was the same, although we had very European mentality, and everything, and our backgrounds are very much really rooted in European history and traditions, and perhaps that is something that helped us really to decide to make transformation successful. And when you look today what's happening in Ukraine, when you look what's happening today in Belarus, then you ask yourself why in the Baltic case Baltic states did succeed, and today Latvia is a leading nation among 28 European nations, your EU nations, and is doing very difficult and interesting and demanding stuff for what's required for EU's development, and why we see a completely different picture in Ukraine, why it's not only the war in eastern part of Ukraine, Russian military invasion in Crimea and eastern part of Ukraine, but as well almost failed state, high level of corruption and high level of poverty. And those are two very different pictures. And the answer is very simple to my mind. The Baltic states, including Latvia, embarked on a very difficult process of reforms already since regaining of independence in 91. And very often these reforms were politically extremely unpopular among the public, among the populations of our states. And of course, the politicians have been risking in many ways really to advancing these agendas. But at the end, it was really a very success story. And immediately, when we regained independence in August 91, one of the first things we did, came out with a law of complete 100% property restitution. And everybody who owned something before the war or their relatives, and they regained back their properties, land, buildings, everything, respectively, whether they have been living in Latvia or outside Latvia. The second thing, currency reform. Latvia was part of Soviet Union. And I used to say that I think our friends and colleagues in Poland and Czechoslovakia were more in an advantageous position because they have been living just behind the Berlin Wall. We have been living behind double Berlin Wall, the Berlin physical wall, and as well Soviet border that was more difficult obstacle to cross or to break through. And because of that, Latvia didn't have national currency. We have been part of Soviet Union, and it was the only Soviet ruble that was that time the only single currency. Reform of currency immediately, in 1993-94, was extremely important to cut the ties with the Soviet Central Bank and make sure that we establish our own currency, our own financial system, and try to link it to something else in the world that we have been not part of for quite a long time. The total privatization of state-owned factories and properties. Basically, in the Baltic states, we had no private property during the Soviet Union times. Everything was nationalized and nothing was owned by people privately. Everything by something what was called Soviet Union as a state. And very difficult but very important process of privatization has been launched in 2004. And it went for 3 or 4 years until everything was really sold to private owners and people that were able and willing to run the business. That was important for creation of functioning market, private market, that was the second element. And the third element was of extremely huge importance. Of course, was everything that relates to functioning civil societies, democratic institutions. That was the third part of reforms. And when we combine all these three elements together, we end up with the situation when just 10 years after Latvia regained independence in 91, in a situation when nothing was working, we had no institutions, we had no diplomats, we had no army, nothing was there except we had very educated and good people, we had constitution that was restored, and we had goodwill and very positive thrive really to succeed. In 10 years' time, Latvia was in position to be considered as a member of what we call European Union. The requirements for the membership in this union are extremely, extremely high and difficult to fulfill, but it was the case. And the second thing, Latvia was in a situation to be considered as the candidate for NATO alliance. So we joined both structures, European Union in 2004, and the very same year we joined NATO. So that was done in period of 14 years from the country that just emerged from the total occupation and domination by Soviets to the country that was part of these alliance, North Atlantic Alliance and European Union. Nothing like that happened just in our neighborhood, in countries that perhaps had the same opportunities. And we are talking today how Ukraine might succeed and what's necessary. There's only one way Ukraine can succeed, and that is they should go the Baltic way, what I call Baltic way. They need to go through reforms, very painful, difficult reforms, curbing corruption, making sure that they have properly functioning rule of law situation, that companies and people are paying their duties, etc., to the state, etc., and of course democratic values. Without that, nobody would be in power to help Ukraine, neither NATO nor any military alliance. It simply should be done. In 2009, Latvia was struck by extremely difficult financial crisis. We have had 17 years approximately constant growth, very strong growth. Baltic states have been called the European tigers. We had economic growth 8, 9, 10% GDP growth on a yearly basis, basically starting from 1998. The salaries have been rising, trade was booming, we joined EU, and by doing that we acceded to the advantages of this membership. Because of membership in Schengen zone, they are able to travel all around Europe without visas. There are free movement of people, free movement of capital, free movement this freedom of establishment. Basically, if you live in Latvia these days, you can easily establish yourself wherever you are pleased to establish and live in Europe, without asking for residency permit or if you find a better job, not in Latvia, but let's say in Portugal or in Greece or in Ireland, you could just go there. You can just stay there and work there and come back when you like to do that. It's something very similar what you can do in the United States. And these things had happened, and we had extremely successful and good economic development in starting from 1998, vindicated by access to European funds, what we gained access in 2004 by joining EU, and there are plenty of funds available for countries, for the regions that perhaps are not so well off than the rest of Europe, and from the European budget, these countries are supported to gain the growth pace as the rest of the Europe. Our banks have been taking lots of loans outside Latvia, including on Wall Street, and investing back in Latvian economy. And suddenly, when you had problems on Wall Street, approximately not so long time ago, you remember, suddenly our very liberal economy suffered a lot, because suddenly the banks were denied access to liquidity on international markets. It was very difficult to find money to invest in economy. Our economy really shrank very severely. GDP drop was 18% drop just in 2009. Unemployment in just 1 year's time jump up from basically non-existent unemployment 4% up to the 20. Salaries for public servants have been cut by 30%. About 30% of people had been laid out. They lost their jobs. It was really a very difficult period of time, and Latvia was not part. Although Latvia was part of European Union, Latvia was not part of Eurozone, as for instance today Greece is. And situation was very difficult, and the only way what we could do was to apply for support from IMF. There was a standby loan package extended by IMF. Not big, just $9 billion, but we have a relatively small economy. It's not a big country, Latvia, and what we had as well, we went through the very difficult period of austerity. these days you see that there are discussions in Europe, very, very politically, very overheated debates whether to fuel economy a little bit more, invest more financial resources from banks, including European Central Bank, or still go through this process of austerity. There are different opinions. We went through the period of austerity, and in basically in 2 years' time, we got back our economy on feet. And already in the third year in a row, Latvian economy is growing, I think, among the best in Europe. We have very small budget deficit, external debt is very small. So basically, we managed to deal with extremely difficult situation in many ways. The survival, economic survival of a country was at stake in 2009. It's something what Greece is facing today. And saying that, I should add one more thing. During this financial crisis, we experienced the strategic decision was taken that we need to focus on introduction of euro. And that was done already in 2009. Although knowing that it might be very difficult to do that during financial crisis, that was the very strategically important way how to keep the government focused on reforms. And basically, we joined Eurozone last year. So we introduced euro, changed our currency to euro 2014. It was very smooth transition and very successful and a good step strategically, keeping in mind the geographical position of Latvia, the size of economy, and as well that our biggest trade partner or and investor, that definitely is Eurozone. So there we are currently. Part of European Union, part of Eurozone, member of NATO. Future might look sunny and bright and good, and suddenly you have this very strategic change in European security just a couple of months after we introduced euro, and not somewhere very far away in from Latvia in Iraq or Syria, that perhaps our people might consider a little bit far away and well. Of course, there are problems, but those are not affecting us directly. But just immediately, in a region you can reach in 1.5 days driving your car, basically. There's this crisis in Crimea, very clear military activity of Russia. In a way that has not been experienced before. It's not something what I could call conventional warfare, but that has another name. It's called hybrid warfare with yellow-green man appearing, infiltrating Crimea, stirring up the protests against Ukrainian state, helping different criminal, or I can even call not only criminal, but terrorist elements with weapons, denying Ukrainian state to control their own international recognized border, constantly resupplying separatists or terrorists in Ukraine but with whatever they need. And then at some point as well, stirring up activities in eastern part of Ukraine. Basically, the war that has been ranging already for a year, almost there, and that's kind of challenge. What suddenly our presidency got on our hands? It's the challenge. What's happening just almost across our border. A challenge what we have seen as well coming for quite a long time. I think the Baltic states living on a border with Russia for centuries, we know exactly what's happening. And although it was not very popular and fashionable really to listen to us during the last 10 years. We have been telling that things are not really good in Russia. Economy is going down. They are trying to invest more in their defense capabilities. They are increasing defense expenditure. Just weeks before Russian military activity in Crimea, there had been some very clear military activities just across our border, close to our border, and Russian military activity in Northern Europe has increased dramatically in just last year. That what we are seeing, and how to deal with the situation. Well, we have led European Council to adopt a number of economic sanctions against Russia. There will be perhaps more added based on the development of situation in Ukraine, whether this peace agreement, what has been, truce agreement, what has been agreed just recently between Ukraine, Russia, and Germany, and France will stand or not. And that's something what we got on our hands without any planning, because always presidents, we can plan for presidency, but there are things we cannot plan. And the second element that deprives us of strategic comfort when it comes to the security is developments in Iraq, in Syria, ISIL. It's not far away from European borders neither. Greece is not very far away from that region. Cyprus, member of EU. Turkey, our ally. We have currently two difficult security challenges in Europe, both very close to European borders or literally on European borders. And that is something that our presidency should find a way how to properly position European politics. What should be the elements in European response to both crises? And that leads me to the last point in my speech. What about our EU presidency? Well, I spoke about challenges, but of course each and every presidency has its own agenda. And for these 6 months, there are three priorities for our EU presidency. The first one, you have seen that Europe is underperforming economically, financially. It's not doing very well, EU, recently. And the priority of Latvia is to somehow to ensure that Europe becomes more competitive. How we do that? Well, there are proposal from European Commission to create the fund for European strategic investment, 315 billion euros fund. That should be invested in not only in the countries that recently joined the EU, but basically in all EU countries. And that there'll be competition with a very concrete project, but if a project will be approved with under the as the project important for whole Europe, it will receive EU funding. And money is there, but there is no fund, functioning fund, how to distribute this money, how to invest. Our presidency is in charge in putting together this mechanism, how to invest, what will be in charge of this investment, how it will be done, etc. That's up to the presidency. And we hope that by June this year, there's not only money available for strategic investment that will fuel EU economy, it will get more active and more vibrant and dynamic, but as well there will be fund that will start to invest. That's the first thing. The second element is digital Europe. Here in the US you can easily buy your things on the net. You don't question whether if you go on Amazon, you buy a thing, you don't question whether it comes from one state or another, or it just comes. You pay your money and it comes from somewhere. In Europe, still, we can buy things on internet, but very often there are obstacles between different states of European Union. Our priority is to come up with a strategy how to remove obstacles to make sure that EU as well functions as a single digital market. And by doing that, we hope that it will add as well additional boost to European economy. That's the second element. And the third element, what we call more engaged Europe, meaning more engaged in immediate European neighborhood, both in the East. By East, I mean Ukraine, I mean Moldova, I mean Georgia, I mean Caucasus, I mean Central Asia. Russia, that's a big enigma, whether to engage or not. Of course, we would love to engage, but it seems that there's no mood in Kremlin to engage these days. And the second area, it's the region on the south, meaning Middle East, meaning Syria, meaning Iraq. Of course, there's debate. I think yesterday Congress approved President's initiative for some military presence in Iraq. But at the same time, Europe will be doing as well some job, not only on military side, but when it comes to investment, when it comes to facilitating social development in Middle East, that will be very much on European side, and because it is region bordering Europe, Europeans will be doing, as well, lots of important stuff. And the third element in this more engaged Europe is international trade, free trade. We are pushing to facilitate an agreement on free trade between European Union, the biggest trading bloc in the world, and United States, called Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership Agreement, or TTIP. And by doing that, it's extremely important strategically agreement. Of course, there are many positive and denying voices on both sides of the Atlantic. People are very often exaggerating threats coming from this agreement, saying that it will be about lowering the standards. It's not about lowering the standards, but it's about setting the standards. If those two most important trading forces can combine and act together, Europe and United States, then we make sure that strategically this bloc will determine still in the world in the years to come the very high level of standards when it comes to international trade. If we fail, these standards will be determined not by us but by somebody else in years to come, and that's something that we would like to really to avoid. So these are the priorities. I have told a little bit about our challenges and about priorities, and I think it's time perhaps for me to stop, and I would be more than happy to engage in conversation with you. Thank you so much.
All right, so if you have any questions, please state your name and maybe major or something about yourself and speak directly into the microphone. Thanks.
Donna Evans, political science major. Right now, I'm reading that Greece wants to leave the EU. And also, because you have open borders for Europeans, that's bringing about significant security challenges because they don't know who's passing from country to country, and that they feel like that might be engaging more terrorism. So you've got countries that are wanting to split up from the EU because Greece has been talking about it openly, but other countries have been talking about it more quietly. And then you have this problem of security. So how do you see this shaking out? I mean, I've never seen Europe in such a mess in my lifetime.
I think European Union, it's a peace project. It's something that has been created immediately after the Second World War. The idea was to make sure that the incentives to launch a new war in Europe is removed. It has been it's an experiment in history. Nothing like that has been seen before. Maybe during Rome Empire, perhaps, but it was different time, different empire, different elements. But European Union is something different. And what I would like to say is that Greece I haven't heard that they would like to leave European Union. They have difficulty with Eurozone. It's not whole 28 countries union, but it's 19 countries among 28. They have introduced euro, including Greece. There have been some conditions to, and there are conditions, very strict conditions, to join Eurozone and introduce euro. And perhaps there was nothing, not that everything was clear and very honest from Greece side when Greece actually joined the UN and Eurozone. And perhaps there was more political motivation that time among the remaining Eurozone members to accept Greece that time, because Greece definitely was not fulfilling the criteria to join Eurozone. But, well, Greece is Greece, and nobody wanted to object that time. It was a nice project, it seemed. Well, currently, with the problems what Greece has financially, there is basically not too many alternatives. Either to get this IMF standby loan and support, either they do what's necessary to make their economy and finances in order, or they try on their own. They have just recently had elections. There's a new government that will be, as it seems, is trying to do something very different from what the previous government has been doing. Whether they will be interested to leave Eurozone at the end, and they're not leaving European Union. It's Great Britain that's discussing about a chance to leave European Union, but Greece never has said that they're willing to leave European Union, because there will be so many following elements that will follow with that financially, economically, from security point of view. Honestly speaking, it is a big, big challenge for Europe, specifically for Eurozone, honestly speaking. But I can't see that Eurozone would start really giving in these very populist demands coming from Greece these days. I think there are some things Greece should do before, irrespectively whether they have left-wing government or right-wing government. There are some fundamentals that should be carried out, and we did something similar in Latvia in 2009-2010. We know that one can deliver if one have really responsible politicians, and if country front loads reforms immediately, acts fast, and communicates properly with people, explaining properly why it's necessary really to go through some period of time of austerity. In Greece, they have been not doing that. I think they have been really relying on their membership in Eurozone, that somebody would come out and buy them out from the problem. And terrorism, yes, it's a big challenge. We have Schengen zone. It's European borders are open. Nobody was anticipating that the second or third generation immigrants in Europe were not integrating so properly within European societies, that still they have enough sentiment and interest to do something very different. And that, I think, one reason why we see so many Europeans leaving and fighting on side of ISIS is, unfortunately, I think, on a very failing integration system in many European nations. But currently as well, I know that one of the priorities of our presidency is to really to assess what we can do legally to prevent this from happening, and it's already in a process. And then there are many things what EU member states can take as well nationally.
Um, First, thank you, Your Excellency, for the presentation. My name is Lisa Hommel, and I'm studying political science, international studies, Russian, and history. I wanted to know your opinion on how likely you think the Russian peace agreement is going to hold, and that if it doesn't, a lot of people are suggesting that Putin's next target or endeavors might be, you know, Latvia, Lithuania, the Baltic states. Do you agree with that, and how concerned are you over that possibility?
I think it's very important that this peace agreement is there. How long it will, whether it will last or not, and how long, I think it's still too early to say. But it's extremely important that all sides really stick to this agreement, and that's perhaps the only way out of the situation. But whether it will last or not, I think it's too early to say. Let's wait and see. There had been other agreements signed before, and not really honored by separatists or Russia. Whether this will be the time, let's see. And when it comes to the Baltic states and whether we might be the next, I don't think so. I think we have had 20 years of very different paths in the Baltics. One reason why it was so easy for Russian special troops and these fighters of hybrid warfare, including propaganda machine, heavy what we are facing, to do what they did in Ukraine, was that Ukraine was on totally different trajectory, I think we are pretty self-confident. We have functioning rule of law society. We have functioning democratic society. Our economy is not only small, tiny Latvian economy, but it's part of big European economy that's much, much bigger than Russian economy. We are part of NATO alliance, and it's not about only our military capabilities, but it's about NATO Article 5. We are doing what's necessary in our case, really, to prevent things from happening. I think we feel quite confident. It's not the first time we are on difficulty was across the border. I think I'm representing the first generation of Latvian men that hasn't seen a war on Latvian territory. Basically, the peace condition in Latvia, it's quite a rarity in our history. So in a way, I think we are pretty well prepared for any eventuality. But whether it cannot bring some provocations, I'm not in a position really to comment on that. But we are doing what's necessary to be done in this situation. We have very strong support among NATO allies, including from United States side. NATO is repositioning their troops in Europe, moving troops from the places that perhaps are more comfortable to stay, but perhaps less relevant for European security in Germany or other places, to the more closer to the borderline. Well, the Baltic states, Poland and Romania these days are called in Washington as frontline allies. So we feel like frontline allies, and we are supported as frontline allies are. So I think we, from that point of view, I really cannot expect that something that what we have seen happening in Ukraine might happen in the Baltic states. Well, one of our arguments sometimes is that we have quite a strong presence of Russian minority. We have 26% ethnic Russians among our population. But I think to argue that all these 26% are just because they are ethnic Russians and they speak Russian language are somehow deprived from ability to act as democratic and free people and will immediately support anything what has been preached from Kremlin, I think it's totally wrong approach. There are very, among 26% of Russians, there are different groups. Democratic, less democratic, young, old, etc.
All right, thank you all for being here. Please join me in thanking Ambassador Rezans for being here today in this excellent, informative forum.
Thank you so much. It's such an enjoyment for me to be among you today.